So welcome back to the Financial Power Hour. Today, I'm honored to present my next guest, Dr. Walter Block. Dr. Block is an Austrian school economist, an anarcho-libertarian philosopher. He is the Harold E. Wirth Eminent Scholar Chair in Economics and Professor of Economics at Loyola University, New Orleans, and a Senior Fellow with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He was also a Senior Fellow with the Fraser Institute from 1979 to 1991 here in Canada. He has authored many books, including Defending the Undefendable, one of my personal favorites, and recently he wrote The Privatization of Roads and Highways. He has many articles on lewrockwell.com and Mises.org, two websites that everybody should visit daily. He's also just returned from Spain, where he gave a presentation about sound money, I believe. Well, Dr. Block, thank you for taking the time to answer my questions, and I welcome you to the Financial Power Hour.
My pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you. I want to start off on asking you, what is libertarianism?
Well, libertarianism, as the name implies, is that liberty is a good thing. And you might say, well, you know, big deal, everyone favors liberty, but it's not true. Only libertarians favor liberty. Only libertarians really favor liberty. The way the political spectrum is seen by many people is the left-right. And on the left you have, I don't know, socialists, and on the right you have, I don't know, conservatives, or maybe liberals on the left. Libertarians agree a little bit with the conservative right on economic freedom and liberty, although they are not as free market-oriented as we are. And we agree with people on the left for personal liberties, like legalizing drugs, sex, rock and roll, and stuff like that, although they, too, are not as extreme as we are. We libertarians, and we disagree with both of them on foreign policy because they're a bunch of warmongers, both of them, whether it's Bush's Iraq and Afghanistan war or it's Obama's. And in Canada, too, there are Canadian soldiers in Afghanistan, and I don't think any Afghanis ever attacked Canada, so I'm not sure why they're there. Or I am sure why they're there, because Canada, too, is an imperialist warmongering country. So, libertarians are very much in favor of freedom, both in the economic sphere, the personal liberty sphere, and also we sort of adopt the, I don't know, George Washington or maybe Ron Paul view on foreign policy, a very, very strong national defense, but no offense, no imperialist. For example, the U.S. has, 800 military bases in 150 foreign countries? That doesn't sound like defense to me. That sounds like oppression and imperialism. So libertarians favor liberty in all three of these spheres, and we're the only ones who do. That's why libertarianism is unique and wonderful.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you 100% on pretty much everything you said there. Canada, often people think in Canada that we're a little better than Americans, but we are involved in this Afghanistan war, which is completely ridiculous.
Well, Canada is a little bit better. They've only got their soldiers in one foreign country that I know of, namely Afghanistan, whereas the U.S. has got them in 150 different countries. So I give Canada better marks than the U.S., but I wish that they would get their troops out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I think that would be sound advice for the Canadian government, but it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
No.
The next question that I want to ask you is about your field of study, Austrian economics. Can you give an overview of what it is?
Yes. First of all, let me give an overview of what it isn't. It's got nothing to do with the economics of Austria. It just so happens that the progenitors, the creators of it, all happen to live in Austria, Menger, Bamberg, Hayek, Mises. It's no more got to do with the economics of Austria than the Chicago School has to do with the economics of the city Chicago. The reason the Chicago School was named is Milton Friedman and Stigler and other Knight and people like that just happen to be at the University of Chicago. Okay, so what? Now that I've said what it's not, I suppose I should say what it is. And what it is that Austrian economics is different than mainstream economics in many, many different dimensions. One dimension, for example, is we're not Keynesians. Now, the usual, debate that the mainstream media see in economics, and the economics profession too sees it this way, is that in macroeconomics the big debate is between the monetarists and the fiscalists. The monetarists would be the Chicago School of Milton Friedman. people like Keynes and I don't know, Krugman and
Krugman, yeah.
And Bernanke, and they would say that, well, I'm not sure about Bernanke, but certainly Krugman would be Keynesians. But the way I, as an Austrian, see it is that there are really two schools of Keynesian economics, the fiscalists and the monetarists, and they're both Keynesians because they believe that that there's market failure, that the market, the free enterprise system, is given to booms and busts in the business cycle, and that it's the job of the government to cure these market failures. The only difference between them is that the right-wing, so-called right-wing types, although I'm not sure why this is right-wing, see the cure through monetary policy, whereas the left-wing, and I'm not sure why they're called left-wing, see it through fiscal policy. But to me, there's not a dime's worth of difference between them. It's, well, maybe a dime, and at today's prices, a dime doesn't buy you much. The point is that, well, in contrast to both of them, the Austrian view would be that there is no market failure. The reason we have these booms and busts has to do with prior government intervention into the economy. And if the government didn't cause the business cycle, we wouldn't have the business cycle. So there's no market failure, and there's no need for nostrums of either the fiscalist or the monetarist type. So that's one distinction between we Austrians and them, Dar. Interventionists, whether of the right-wing monetarist or the left-wing fiscalist Keynesian view, they're all a bunch of Keynesians. Another dimension on which Austrians disagree with the mainstream economics profession would be that they, and this sort of methodology, they, them guys, see economics as a science along the lines of physics or chemistry, namely an empirical science, where you test hypotheses, and there are only hypotheses out there. There are no absolute truths. And we Austrians see economics, the proper study of economics, is not testing hypotheses which are can never be, how shall I say, proved, but can only be not disconfirmed. So, for example, I now trade you a my wristwatch for your tie. And my claim is that I like your tie more than my wristwatch, and you like my wristwatch more than your tie. And this is an absolute certainty in the ex ante sense that we'll both gain the difference in the evaluations, the opposite evaluations between the tie and the wristwatch. And there's no way to test that. Indeed, the very idea that you could test such a thing is just imbecilic. And because we don't believe in empirical tests, the mainstream rejects us, sees us as, I don't know, a cult or something like that. Milton Friedman once attacked the Austrian school and said, well, when two Austrians disagree, what do? Fight? Well, no more than when two geometricians disagree, do they fight, or two logicians, two people who are engaged in symbolic logic and they disagree on the fifth premise, do they have to fight? That's silly. In other words, we see economics more as a branch of logic or a branch of mathematics, and they see it as a an empirical science. So that's a very big difference between Austrianism and the mainstream. Let me just give you one more example to sort of buttress it. Not both, but the mainstream also sees antitrust as a market failure, or rather monopoly as a market failure, whereas Austrians do not see any market failure anywhere, and certainly not in the competition field. So we would not favor antitrust legislation, or anti-combines legislation, as they call it in Canada. We would just get rid of it entirely. Those are three areas where Austrians disagree with the mainstream, and I think one way to define Austrianism is how it does disagree with the mainstream, and I think I've been babbling on too long, so I'll give you a turn.
No, I thoroughly enjoy your answer, because it's so true. The Austrians are a school that is apart from everybody else, and I think that's what makes them so great.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I actually like to consider myself an Austrian in my political views and in my everyday life. You also talked about the the business cycle a little bit. And the Austrians have what I call the best explanation of what's happening right now in the economy around the world. And it's called the Austrian business cycle. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yes. The way the government creates the business cycle is by artificially lowering interest rates below the level that otherwise would have obtained based on the savings and investment and time preferences of the community. And when the government artificially lowers the interest rate and creates credit, extra credit through the credit market, what this does is it sends out a signal to entrepreneurs to invest in heavier industry and more long or roundabout methods of production. Heavy industry, cars, houses, mining, basic industries, steel, rubber, things like that. And these investments are incompatible with the savings rate of the people. The people aren't saving as much money as that to justify the investment in heavy industry. And what happens is that the government keeps doing this for a long time because they like to create money, and the way that the interest rates are pushed down below the levels, the market levels, is by government creating money. And this is unsustainable in the long run, although in the short run it seems good during the boom period. But eventually they have to pull back lest they create hyperinflation, and then the malinvestments are seen as the malinvestments as they are, and then we have all sorts of problems in the heavy industries and in long-term consumer goods like cars and houses. This time around, the government supported housing in other ways as well, through HUD and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, pushing people into houses, giving them mortgages who were unable to pay, support them because they didn't have any good credit ratings. So what the Austrians see is that the government created the boom period. The boom period is unsustainable. It must necessarily eventually end up in a bust period, and that's the cause of it. It's not greed. It's not, other explanations. It's not natural to the market. It's not part of the market. And the solution that the Austrians offer is laissez-faire capitalism. Let government stop artificially creating money. Let's get rid of central banks. Let's get rid of fiat currency. Let's get back to the gold standard. Because if gold is money, gold is the market money, then we don't have any artificial creation of money and misallocation of resources.
Well, I think one of the main arguments that people give against the Austrian business cycle is what they see as deregulation under the Clinton administration and under the Bush administration, and they call it laissez-faire capitalism without a leash. What would you respond to somebody who would say that?
Well, there are people who say that the reason we have the business cycle now is because of the laissez-faire capitalism that we now have, but this is horrendously untrue. We don't have anything like laissez-faire capitalism. We have all sorts of government intervention. We have a central bank. We have, in the U.S., the Federal Reserve System. We have fiat currency. I mean, laissez-faire capitalism would be that gold would be money. We don't have gold as money. There'd be no central banks. There'd be no government involvement in any of this stuff. So when they slightly deregulate some little thingy and they say, aha, this is laissez-faire capitalism, this just shows economic illiteracy.
Yeah, Murray Rothbard had a great quote about that. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but to be ignorant of economics is no reason. You can't criticize it if you're ignorant of it.
Something like, it's no sin to be ignorant of economics. Economics is a very difficult subject, but to have a big loudmouth opinion on it and be totally ignorant of it is highly problematic.
Yes, that's pretty much the essence of his quote. I'm sorry there for not remembering it.
Oh, no, you did a fine job.
Personally, I believe that, sound money is the solution to all our problems right now. Can you explain the difference between sound money and the current system we have under the central bank and fractional reserve banking?
Yes, absolutely. By the way, we should mention the name of Ron Paul in the U.S. He's just been utterly and totally magnificent. He's been a a one-man band, maybe that's too strong, but certainly the leader of our little group about getting rid of the Fed, he doesn't have the power to get rid of it, but at least he's trying to audit it, much to the consternation of Ben Bernanke.
Well, he has a lot of support, both now in the Senate it's growing, but he has, he had somewhere over close to 250 co-sponsors in the House.
Yes, but that was just to audit the Fed.
Yeah, to audit the Fed, not to end the Fed.
Right. What Ron wants in his heart of hearts, is, of course, is to not audit it, but to get rid of it. But he doesn't have the political power to end it, so he's trying to do it through a gradual process. But at least first, let's audit it. Okay. You mentioned fractional reserve banking, and I should be kicked for not mentioning that first. You were quite right in mentioning that. This is another deviation from laissez-faire capitalism. Let's take the following case. You're Mr. A, and you have $100, and you come to me, Mr. B, the bank, and you deposit your $100 in my bank. And what I do is I give you a demand deposit. And now you can come to my bank anytime and get your $100 out. Then what I do is I turn around and I lend out money to Mr. C. I lend him $90 because I want to keep a fraction reserve, and let's say the fraction that I want to keep on reserve is 10%. So I take your $100, I've got it in my coffers, and I keep 10 of your $100, and I lend him 90. And I lend it to him in the form, again, of a demand deposit. Now, he can come into the bank anytime he wants and get out his 90. So right now, the money stock has increased from 100 to 190. And what's going to happen is through a process of the multiplier effect with a 10% reserve, your $100 will stand ready to support $1,000 because the multiplier will be 10 with a 10% fraction. But let's just take this 190. We now have extra money floating around and yet not extra goods. There's not one extra good that was created because of this little financial ledger domain that I just engaged in. So we now have inflation of the money supply. We have prices will take a hike. If this is done through the credit market, there will be a lowering of the interest rate because of this, and it'll start off the business cycle. So fractional reserve banking is a culprit in creating the business cycle, and it's also a violation of libertarian law, because under libertarianism, rights can't clash. You're wearing a shirt. I can't wear that shirt. Only one of us can have the shirt. We can't both own the shirt 100%. We could be partners in the shirt. You could have the shirt Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and we wash it on Sunday or something like that. But right now, we can't both own 100% of that shirt, which is an utter impossibility and a violation of rights, because rights would then clash. Well, Mr. A, that's you, and Mr. C both have a right to $190. And if you both come into the bank at the same time, I can't pay it. I've only got $10 and I owe $190. So I am really a bankrupt bank, and I should be put out of business, and I should be thrown in jail for engaging in fraud. So fractional reserve banking is an anathema to free enterprise, and we now have it. And and because of this, you know, we'll have bank runs, and this is one of the problems that they had in the Great Depression of the 1930s, that there were bank runs, and there were laws now against casting aspersions on the probity of banks, and the probity of banks is not very good because they're all fractional reserve banks. So, yes, fractional reserve banks are a deviation from laissez-faire capitalism, and in a free society based on libertarianism, we wouldn't have them, and that's yet another cause of the business cycle.
Yeah, I think it's an infringement on traditional common law. I think it's Jesus Huerto de Soto wrote a great book, Money, Bank, Credit, and Economic Cycles, where he explains that. It's one of my first books that I read about Austrian economics, and that really opened my eyes, actually.
Yes, that is a magnificent book. I was just in Spain at the School of Salamanca. Huerto de Soto gave a speech there. He won the Schlaubaum Prize put on by the Mises Institute. He's a wonderful fellow, and you should get him on your program one of these days. He really did a monumental book on fractional reserve banking.
Yes, it's up there with the Human Action and Murray Rothbard's great treatise on economics.
Yes. yes, I think Huerta de Soto deserves to be mentioned in the same sentence as those two guys.
Yes, yes, and I think you do too. I think Lou Rockwell actually commented on you a while back. He said that Murray Rothbard in his life was known as Mr. Libertarian, but we can make a solid case today that Walter Block now has that title.
Well, you're very kind. I don't know if I agree with that, but thanks for the compliment.
Well, it wasn't me. It was Lou Rockwell who said it, and Lou Rockwell is a titan right now in the Austrian School of Economics and in the Liberty Movement.
Well, I think Lou Rockwell deserves that. I'm not sure about me, but certainly him.
I really enjoy you taking some time out of your busy schedule to come on my show. And just before we go, do you have some books that you could tell people who are just getting introduced to Austrian economics that they could read?
Well, my two favorite books, the two books that converted me, were Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, a magnificent novel, and Henry Hazlitt's book, Economics in One Lesson. Now, I have my own book, so I can toot my horn a little bit. It's called Defending the Undefendable, and it's sort of an homage to Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. So I would recommend those three as a possibility.
Yeah, Defending the Undefendable was just pretty much a continuation of Economics in One Lesson.
Which is in many ways, there's a resemblance.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walter Block, Dr. Walter Block, thank you for taking some time to answer my questions, and it's a pleasure to have you on my show.
It was wonderful to be with you for this time.
Thank you.